The Golden Age of Radio is on the air. Morehead State Public Radio presents classic old-time radio programs from radio's golden age, the 1930s through the 1950s. On this program of the Golden Age of Radio, Lorene Tuttle and Howard Duff star in The Adventures of Sam Spade. Smiling Ed McConnell sings on Aladdin Lamp and an episode of Mert and Marge from 1937. Stay tuned for the Golden Age of Radio after today's news from NPR on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Later on today's show, Smilin' Ed McConnell sings on Aladdin Lamp and an episode of Mert and Marge from 1937. Right now, the Bow Window Caper on The Adventures of Sam Spade, starring Lorene Tuttle and Howard Duff as Sam Spade, as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective. Brought to you by Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic, the non-alcoholic hair tonic that contains lanolin. Wild Root Cream Oil, again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first.
Sam Spade Detective Agency.
Hello, sweetheart. It's only me.
Oh, why so modest?
Women, Effie. Age cannot weather nor custom stale their infinite variety.
Huh?
Against their incalculable wiles, mere man is a leaf in the wind.
Oh, Sam, do you really... Oh. Who was she and how windy was it?
Cyclonic, Effie. We had to close every window in the house.
But I...
If you will just contain your natural feminine curiosity for a few moments, I'll be right down to dictate my report on the Bow Window Caper.
Dashiell Hammett, America's leading detective fiction writer and creator of Sam Spade, the hard-boiled private eye, and William Spear, radio's outstanding producer-director of mystery and crime drama, join their talents to make your hair stand on end with The Adventures of Sam Spade. Presented by the makers of Wild Root Cream Oil for the hair. To every man who says, I don't use a hair tonic or I don't believe in a hair tonic, I say this. Decide for yourself, but don't decide until you've tried Wild Root Cream Oil, the entirely different hair tonic. There's not a drop of alcohol in Wild Root Cream Oil, and it contains soothing lanolin. What's more, it grooms your hair the right way, neatly and naturally. So get the big economy-sized bottle and the handy new tube at your drug or toilet goods counter. Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first. And now, with Howard Duff starring as Spade, Wild Root brings to the air the greatest private detective of them all in The Adventures of Sam Spade.
A bow window is a bay window that you look into instead of out of.
Look into instead of out. Oh, Sam.
Get your book, Panther Girl, and slink on in.
Well, what was she trying to see through the bow window?
Hmm?
I mean, whose house was it?
Her own.
But if it was her own house, then why would she
It just goes to show you, darling, what some women will stoop to.
It does?
Mm-hmm. It was a low window.
Oh. Well, whenever you're ready, Sam.
Date, November 10th.
Ninth.
Ninth. Correct. 1947. To Dr. Helmut Reese.
I was right for once.
Yeah. From Samuel Spade, license number 137596. Subject, the Bow Window Caper. Dear Dr. Reese, I know that this report will not make pleasant reading for you, but you paid for it, so here it is. As far as I was concerned, it all started on Thursday morning when you called at my office. From your story, I gathered it had been going on for some time.
You will say these are merely the actions of a jealous woman, Mr. Spade. But I assure you there's more to it than that. It must be a carefully thought-out plan to ruin my career, my whole life.
In what way, Dr. Reese?
She spies on my private consultations. Insults my women patients. I can no longer even keep a nurse for more than a week at a time. Scenes, hysterics, outbursts of violence. I cannot continue my work under such conditions.
Well, why don't you give her a divorce?
Why, no. This is not her desire. If it were, it would be simple. No, she wants to bring me to ruin. She wants to see me on my knees in front of the populace.
Why?
That is what I want to find out. Why?
Doctor, I think you ought to take this case to a head doctor.
I have consulted a psychiatrist. He examined her. She's perfectly competent mentally. For you see, there is here already some mystery. For which one comes to a detective.
How long has this been going on, Dr. Reese?
Since 3 months only. But in this time, she has reduced me to utter desolation.
Dr. Reese was a very good divorce lawyer right down the hall from my
office. No. I discussed the matter of a divorce with her a few days back. This was her answer. You see, a receipt for the purchase of a gun. And this note in her handwriting.
I hope you will not force me to use this. Esther.
Yes.
What do you think she has in mind? Murder or suicide?
She refused to discuss it. But one thing I have noticed. Since she has bought this gun, a new development, a strange man watches my house. Several times I have caught him following me.
Well, she might have hired a detective to check on whether you visit a lawyer.
Perhaps it is very simple, but it is all too strange to be harmless.
I half-heartedly agreed that it might be Dr. Reese, and when your check for $100 didn't bounce, I went to work wholeheartedly. I reached your house on Pacific Avenue just as the streetlights were going on. It's a quiet neighborhood, so I could hear it before I got close enough to read the number on the door.
Get out of this house! Get out! You have no...
They seemed to be slugging their way toward the back of the house, so I decided to risk an entrance. I found the doorbell, and I was about to punch it when I caught sight of your mystery man. He was crouched in a clump of shrubbery that grew under the bow window at the corner of the house. He was still there with his eyes glued to the window when I walked up behind him.
Hey, let go of me. Let go.
Come on. You're going inside.
Listen, I'm not just a snooper.
I didn't say you were. I'm just inviting you inside for a better look.
Now, I'm warning you, if you don't let go of me, I'm...
Stop squirming, will you?
Let go!
The kick he landed on me wasn't according to the Wrestling Association's rules, but I let him get away with it, mainly because I couldn't move for 3 or 4 minutes, and by that time he disappeared down the street. When I recovered my faculties and staggered back to the door, I didn't bother ringing the bell. I just walked in. The hen fight was still going on somewhere in the upper reaches of the house. Then a door burst open on the upper landing, and a girl in a nurse's uniform ran down the stairs toward me, pursued by a pale little woman with a pinched face who was brandishing a pair of brass fire tongs. You brushed past me, Dr. Reese, and headed off the pursuer.
Esther, stop this! Stop this at once! Have you gone crazy? Give me those fire tongs! Give them to me!
What's the matter, Helmut? Afraid I'll mar your light of love's beauty?
What started this?
I caught her creeping about the kitchen. She was going to poison my food.
I explained to you, Mrs. Reese. The doctor said...
Oh, don't bother explaining, Miss Robbins. These morbid fancies of hers.
Don't think I don't know what goes on in that office. That office when I'm not allowed anymore.
That's only because you make the patient so nervous, Esther.
I know what goes on. You and those women.
That will do, Esther. Go to your room.
Very well. But I won't have that woman in this house another day, Helmuth. Is that understood?
Go to your room, Esther.
I'm going. But remember what I said. I've warned you both.
I can't.
There, Miss Swabbins. Now don't. There.
I can't. Anymore, Doctor. I tell you, it's making me a nervous wreck. I just...
Dr. Reese.
Huh? Oh, Mr. Spade. You saw, you heard?
Yeah.
Come into my office. We'll talk.
I think we'd better.
Doctor, there's still one more patient waiting to see you, Doctor.
Well, just have her wait a little longer.
Yes.
This way, Mr. Spade.
Sit down, Mr. Spade.
Thanks, but I can say what I have to say standing. Your wife's a very tragic woman, Doctor. I wish I could help her. I wish I could help you, too, but I can't.
You heard her threat against Miss Robbins. Was that a joke?
There's nothing funny about jealousy.
But there is this man who watches the house. And the gun she bought.
I collared him outside just now.
Oh, well, did you get him to talk?
No, but I wouldn't worry about him if I were you. And about that gun. The Constitution says every citizen shall have the right to bear arms. Even Parnell Thomas can't do
that. Mr. Spade, I've not yet told you all. If I...
Oh, Doctor, I'm sorry to interrupt, but this patient, she's been waiting for more than an hour.
Well, who is she?
Mrs. Cavanaugh.
Cavanaugh? Cavanaugh, who? Well, has she been here before?
Of course, last week. Here's her card.
Oh, yes. I'd better get it over. Send her in.
Yes, Doctor. And Doctor, I'm resigning. I'll finish the day, of course, and then I'm through. I'm sorry.
Yes, well. Very well, Miss Robbins. I can't say that I blame you. Good luck.
Goodbye, Doctor.
Well, I'll be going along myself now, Doctor.
No. You must hear me out, Mrs. Spade. I've not yet told all. If you'll just wait until I have seen this patient, please, Mr. Spade, please.
Okay, I'll wait outside.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
Come on in, Mrs.
So, you're leaving the doctor's employ, nurse?
I am. Well, Mr. Spade, how does it look from the grandstand?
Messy?
Mm-hmm. You don't mind if I finish cleaning out this desk?
Go right ahead.
Thank you.
What's the matter with Esther, anyway?
I could sum the whole thing up in a single five-letter word, shall I?
You have.
Are you going to walk out on him?
Aren't you?
Yes, I am. Oh, but Esther isn't jealous of your type, if you don't mind my mentioning it.
I feel heartened to think that you noticed I was different.
Oh, I did, Mr. Spade. I really did.
You don't seem particularly nursey to me, either.
I'm not. My, you have a fast pulse, Mr. Spade.
Yes, I've been feeling very weak the last few minutes. I need care.
Oh, you know, you don't eat enough apples, Mr. Spade. Well, I guess I've finished. Oh, there's that old contract. I wonder... Mr. Spade, will you tell the doctor I've left and thank him for me again?
Aren't you going to see him before you go?
No, I'm not. He'd only beg me to stay, and it's... Well, it's simply out of the question. Oh, the poor guy. I just don't know what I'd do if I were in his place. For you, Mr. Spade.
I did, and I told her. She told me I was a victim of hypertension and left me with my mouth open and no thermometer in it. 5 minutes after she'd gone out through the front entrance, your wife came down the stairs looking knowingly at me and the door to the doctor's office and left by the same route. 10 minutes after that, I was halfway through a 1937 National Geographic that was the latest edition on the waiting room table and had reached the third paragraph on the natural beauties of Winona County, Minnesota. But I never finished it.
I will be back in a minute.
The first thing I saw when I entered the room was Mrs. Cavanaugh, your patient.
Why did he do it?
You, Doctor, were standing over her, nervously twitching off the rubber glove from your right hand. You tested her throat for pulse, then listened through a stethoscope. It was purely a formality. One of the .38 caliber slugs had entered the right temple. The other had torn through the base of the skull. How did it happen?
I don't know. I had completed the examination and walked over there to put my instruments away. When I turned back, she had a gun in her hand. Before I could stop her, she pulled the trigger. Suicide, of course.
Why?
Well, I just told her the truth, that there was nothing I or any other doctor could do for her. But she had perhaps a month, perhaps less. She had suffered great pain, of course, for some time.
You saw her shoot herself, you say?
Yes. The gun. She took it out of my desk drawer. I'd removed it from my wife's room earlier today.
I see. Well, Doctor, this is the neatest suicide I ever saw. No powder burns, and from the way she's lying, she must have shot herself in the direction of that window, at least 10 feet away. She screamed before the shots were fired and had time to fire a second bullet into her head and throw the gun across the room before she fell.
Well, Helmer, at last it's happened, hasn't it?
Esther, leave this room.
I told Helmuth one of the husbands would catch up with him. Pretty, wasn't she? I don't remember this one.
The expression on your face might have been horror or fear or both, Dr. Reese. But your wife was smiling. When my eyes left her face, I noticed a leaf clinging to the hem of her coat. It might have come from the shrub that grew up against the house. And her shoes were splashed with mud that could have and probably did come from the cultivated flower bed just outside the bow window.
The makers of Wild Root Cream Oil are presenting the weekly Sunday adventure of Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, Sam Spade. Now, here's important news on good grooming. Better than 4 out of 5 users of Wild Root Cream Oil say they prefer Wild Root Cream Oil to all other hair tonics. Here is new and even more conclusive evidence that Wild Root Cream Oil is again and again the choice of men who put good grooming first. So if you want the well-groomed look that helps you get ahead socially and on the job, listen. Recently, thousands of people from coast to coast who bought Wild Root Cream Oil for the first time were asked, how does Wild Root Cream Oil compare with the hair tonic you previously used? The results were amazing. Better than 4 out of 5 who replied said they preferred Wild Root Cream Oil. And no wonder. It gives you the advantages that men consider most important. Wild Root Cream Oil grooms your hair neatly and naturally, relieves annoying dryness, and removes loose dandruff. What's more, non-alcoholic Wild Root Cream Oil is the only leading hair tonic that contains soothing lanolin. That's like the oil of your skin. So ask for Wild Root Cream Oil. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first. And now, back to the Bow Window Caper. Tonight's adventure with Sam Spade.
Obviously, there were two equally good suspects in the Kavanaugh murder. Either your wife had killed her in a jealous rage, or you'd killed her with your wife's gun to frame her for the murder. I decided to let the police worry it out and went home to bed. The morning headlines were a bit of a surprise. Nurse sought in shooting of mystery woman. Item. The cops had found Celeste Robbins' fingerprints all over the murder gun. And item. Mrs. Kavanaugh, the murdered woman, had given a vacant lot as her address, and her body was lying unclaimed at the morgue. I decided to pay her a visit. Maxie, hey, Maxie.
What? Oh, Sam. Sammy, my boy. Hey, it's good to look on you.
How are you, Maxwell?
Oh, fine, fine. What brings you here, Sam?
The Kavanaugh woman.
The Kavanaugh, huh? Let's see who's with us today. Stiftel, Milton, Schwartz, Kelly. I knew him, nice guy. Feige. Uh-huh. Kavanaugh. Rose. Hello, Rose. Hey, Sam, don't you want to look at Rose?
No, I've seen her.
Ah. Yeah, just checked her back in. Autopsy. Why would anybody in the world knock her off? In her condition, all he needed to do was wait. A month. Couple of weeks.
Bad as that, huh?
Worse.
Anybody claim her yet?
Well, that... Hello. Something we can do for you?
My name is Kavanaugh. I come for my wife.
He was standing with his back to me, and I didn't get a good look at his face until he walked over to the desk with Master. The voice tipped me even before I saw the face. It was the man I'd caught outside your office window less than half an hour before the murder. If he recognized me, he didn't let it show. I waited while he went in with Maxie. When he came out, there were tears streaming down his face. I'd been waiting for two reasons. I had had some questions to ask him, and I had wanted to pay back that jolt he'd given me the night before. I left without doing either.
Oh, hello, Sam.
Hello, sweetheart. Any calls?
Lieutenant Dundee of Homicide.
Yeah.
Dr. Reese.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a girl waiting inside. Wouldn't give any name.
So you let her wait in my private office.
Well, I don't think you you'll mind when you've seen her. She's by way of being a knockout.
Well, thank you, Effie. That was very thoughtful of you, dear.
You're welcome, Sam.
Sam, please, please don't be angry with me for coming here. I had to talk to somebody.
What you need is a good criminal lawyer, Nurse Rodham.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Do you think I killed that woman?
How did your prints get on that gun? Don't tell me she threatened you with it and you grabbed it out of her hand.
No, no, I didn't. I did nothing at all.
Take it easy, nurse. Take it easy. Would you like a drink or something?
No, no. Thank you anyway. I'll be all right. Well, she came in from shopping 3 days ago, just as nice as pie. And she came creeping around. You know how she is. And she said, I bought something today. It's lovely. And with that, she hauled this gun out of her handbag. And so, to humor her, I took it and I looked at it. That was foolish.
It certainly was foolish.
Well, nickel plated, ideal surface for fingerprints. And I remember she was wearing gloves. Struck me as peculiar at the time, but I'm so stupid. I didn't think of it until just now.
Everything's a little peculiar about this caper. A woman who was dying anyway gets shot. Nobody even seems to know who she was. Doesn't make sense.
No, no, it doesn't make much sense. What should I do, Sam? Give myself up?
I think you should.
Yes, I thought you'd say that. All right, phone the police.
You got a lot of courage. Sure you don't want a drink?
No. No, thank you. I'll be all right. I'll be all right.
Homicide. Dundee.
Dundee, Sam Spade. I got the Robbins girl here in my office. She wants to check in.
Oh? Well, tell her to forget it, Sam. Reese's wife just made a full confession.
That tore it. In my anxiety to see how you were bearing up under the shock, Doctor, I blew a buck and a half of your money on a taxi all the way out to your address on Pacific Avenue. To my astonishment, you were wearing a look of real distress.
I don't understand it, Mr. Spade. This confessing, it's not like her. It's all too strange to be harmless.
Dr. Reed, I'd like to talk to you alone. Do you mind, Mr. Spade?
Go right ahead. I strained my ears outside your consulting room, but all I could hear was a few vague murmurs. Then, for no good reason, I decided to have a look at your wife's bedroom upstairs. The cops had been there before me, so I didn't expect to find much, and I didn't. I was tapping the woodwork for secret panels or something when I heard a heavy tread on the stairway. I wheeled around, my hands inside my coat. A jolly-looking character in coveralls was standing in the doorway.
Home Electronics.
I beg your pardon?
Dagen, Home Electronics. I come to take the equipment.
What equipment?
The dictograph. She don't need it no more. Ask me, she hurt too much.
Mrs. Reese had a dictograph installed?
Yeah, a metal type installation. Yeah, this here's a speaker. Yeah, my own design. Looks like a portable radio, don't it?
Yeah, where's the other end? Where's the microphone?
It's in the doc's private office. You interested, eh?
Yeah, turn it on, will you?
Oh, sure. Yeah, we'll get it tuned in a minute there. Oh, feedback. Wait a minute, I'll fix it.
Let
her talk.
Let her talk. What can she tell? I don't know. But it's uncanny the way she
nice, huh?
Every word we spoke together.
That's because of the
dictograph.
Neat rig,
yes,
huh?
Shut up. We cannot allow this terrible tragedy to come between us. We love each other. Nothing can change that.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's as nice, ain't it?
Quiet, quiet.
I just... No, please. Please don't. Now stop it, Holmes. I don't want you. Please don't.
What is it, Celeste? What has happened?
Chief, what has happened? You ask that. When I've been attacked by a mad woman and accused of murder all in the space of 12 hours.
But it's all over now.
Just so, Helen. Yes, all over.
Well, can't you turn it up a little more?
Oh, sure, sure, turn it up.
Hold it.
And I'm very, very ashamed. I suppose it was my usual thing. I always get sorry for a poor, weak man and get involved. But this time, I'm sorry for her.
Celeste, please.
When I was a kid, I liked it. It used to make me feel powerful and, well, to watch them squirm. But it's no fun anymore watching another woman in the agonies of jealousy. And you, I thought you were just weak. You're a brutal, unscrupulous murderer.
What are you saying, Celeste?
You killed Mrs. Cavanaugh.
Why, that's impossible.
You stood deliberately in that window and you fired two shots right at
it. Hey, what gives you?
Why weren't my fingerprints on that gun?
Because you were wearing your rubber gloves, Doctor.
Celeste, don't say any more.
No.
help me. Help me get his shirt off, Mr. Spade. He's been shot.
Who shot him, you?
Through the window, the same man, the one who watched the house.
Hold this tourniquet tight, please.
It's nothing. A flesh wound. His aim was bad.
Yeah, too bad. Kavanaugh, you still out there? You got nothing to worry about. He's still alive.
I missed him.
Give me a hand. Come on. That's it.
I missed him.
That was lucky. You're taking the rap of your wife's murder, too, if you're a better shot.
He did it. He killed my wife. I was at the window. I saw him. What I don't understand is why his wife confessed.
She loved him, Mr. Kavanaugh. You should understand that.
I guess that's what happens to love when it gets crossed up. Why didn't you tell the police what you saw?
They'd have hung it on me. She was a stranger to everyone else. I'd been quarreling with her, suspicious, acting like a maniac. She never told me. She must have been going to one doctor after another, trying to find one that would give her one ray of hope. In pain all the time, too, and never letting on. Never. Even after that first visit she made to Reese's office, I didn't tumble. I thought she was meeting him on the sly. And I followed her both times. That last time I carried a gun. I might have killed her if what I suspected had been true.
I'm very sorry, Mr. Kavanaugh. I didn't realize.
You're pretty late with your regrets, Doctor. I don't quite figure you either. Maybe the prison psychiatrist can.
Dundee homicide.
Dundee, tear up Mrs. Reese's confession. Come on over and get the doctor.
Dr. Reese?
Yeah. By the way, he accidentally shot himself in the arm. Isn't that right, Doctor?
What? Yes. Accidentally.
Why didn't she tell me? Why didn't she tell me?
I don't know, Kavanaugh. Women. Sometimes they make too much sense, or we don't make enough, or maybe we're all crazy. And that, Dr. Reese, is the crop. The risk of laboring a point, there's also the mystery of why a nice girl like Celeste Robbins ever fell for a guy like you. You'll have plenty of free time to think it over between now and the trial. If you find the answer, drop me a line. Period, and a report.
You know, Sam, that's Celeste. I like her. I wish we could do something for her.
Well, I've already thought of that, Evie.
Oh? What are you going to do, Sam?
Type that up, sweetheart, and I'll write you a happy ending.
Here's how you can find out whether the hair tonic you're using today is giving you what you ought to get in good grooming. Ask yourself, does my present hair tonic groom my hair neatly and naturally, or does it leave my hair sticky or greasy? And does it relieve dryness and remove loose dandruff, too? Or does it do just a halfway job? Unless you can honestly say that your present hair tonic does all that for your hair, you owe it to yourself to try Wild Root Cream Oil right away. Try Wild Root Cream Oil and see for yourself how it improves your appearance, grooms your hair neatly and naturally, relieves dryness, and removes loose dandruff. It's non-alcoholic and contains soothing lanolin. Get the big economy-sized bottle and the handy new tube that's easy to pack when you travel and grand for the bathroom cabinet. Don't delay. Get it today. Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first.
Oh, here's the report, Sam. You want to read it over?
I do not. File it under F, but forget.
About that poor Celeste, Sam.
Oh, yeah. Well, I made a date with Celeste to take her dancing tomorrow night. She needs cheering up, you know.
Well, what for?
Well, you said she needed help.
Well, that isn't exactly the kind of help I had in mind.
Oh.
I don't see why it's necessary.
Effie, we must each of us give a particular kind of help each of us is particularly equipped to give.
Very well. She wished to. She used to make over men just to get the other women jealous.
That she did. Aren't other women silly to allow themselves to get jealous when they know just what she's up to?
Idiotic. Just idiotic.
Sure thing. And go home, Effie. I'm a lousy dancer.
Oh, very well. Have fun, Sam. Good night, Sam.
Good night, sweetheart.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, are produced and directed by William Spear. Sam Spade is played by Howard Duff. Loreen Tuttle is Effie. The Adventures of Sam Spade are written for radio by Bob Tallman and Gil Dowd, with musical direction by Lud Gluskin. This is Dick Joy, reminding you that next Sunday, author Dashiell Hammett and producer William Spear join forces for another adventure with Sam Spade, brought to you by Wild Root Cream Oil. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first. Smart girls use Wild Root Cream Oil, too, for quick, good grooming and to relieve dryness between permanents. Mothers say it's grand for training children's hair. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The tables are empty, the dance floor's deserted. You play the same love song, it's the tenth time you've heard it. That's the beginning, just one of the clues. You've had your first lesson in learning the blues. The cigarettes you light, one after another, won't help you forget her and the way that you love her. You're only burning a torch you can't lose, but you're on the right track for learning the blues. When you're at home alone, the blues will taunt you constantly. When you're out in a crowd, the blues will haunt your memory. The nights when you don't sleep, the whole night you're crying, but you can't forget her. Soon you even stop trying. Walk that floor and wear out your shoes. When you feel your heart break, you're learning the blues. When you're at home alone, the blues will taunt you constantly. When you're out in a crowd, those blues will haunt your memory. The nights when you don't sleep, that whole night you're crying, but you can't forget her. Soon you even stop trying. You'll walk the floor and you'll wear out your shoes. When you feel your heart break, you're learning those blues.
You're listening to the Golden Age of Radio featuring Frank Sinatra with Learning the Blues from 1955. We also heard an episode of The Adventures of Sam Spade starring Lorraine Tuttle and Howard Duff as Sam Spade. Stay tuned for more classic old-time radio from the 1930s through the 1950s. When the Golden Age of Radio continues on Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY at 90.3 FM. Thank you. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. In a moment, Mert and Marge plan to open theater from 1937. But first, here's Smiling Ed McConnell with a couple of songs on Aladdin Lamp as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
Let's sing a song you don't hear every day. It's your old friend calling again. Hello, sweethearts. It's Smiling Ed McConnell, the Aladdin Lamp Man again. Have you heard this one lately? I'm forever blowing bubbles, pretty bubbles in the air. They fly so high, they nearly reach the sky. Then, like my dreams, they fade and die. Fortune's always hiding. I've looked everywhere. I'm forever blowing bubbles, pretty bubbles in the air. Now let's blow 'em real pretty for the gals. That's it, real pretty now. Everywhere I'm forever blowing bubbles, pretty bubbles in the air. Songs you don't hear every day, songs that chase your blues away. Old songs are like old friends. And honey, do you know why our store is called a friendly store by so many of our neighbors? It's because courtesy and service is our motto. We want you to enjoy shopping at our store, and that's why we do everything we can to make your visit more pleasant. And you'll think pleasant thoughts about us after you get home, too, if you take an Aladdin electric lamp with a wonderful washable whippalite shade home with you. These beautiful practical lamps and shades will add just the right decorative touch to your rooms. Come in and see us at our friendly store real soon, won't you? And now for our hymn. When your heart is aching, turn to Jesus. He's the dearest friend that you can know. You will find him standing close beside you, waiting peace and comfort to bestow. Heartaches, take them all to Jesus. Go to him today. Do it now without heartaches, take them all to Jesus. He will take your heartaches all away. And that he will. Well, honey, that's all for today. This is Smiling Ed McConnell, the Aladdin Lamp Man, saying, come in and see us soon. And listen next time, because we'll be back to sing a song you don't hear every day when we all come calling again.
Presenting Mert and Marge. another episode in the thrilling true-to-life experiences of Merton Marge, brought to you by the makers of concentrated super suds in the blue box, the new all-purpose soap for laundry and dishes for every household use. Mrs. Lansing and Mrs. Hoyt, mothers of two large families, are having a little chat about teenage problems.
So, nothing will do, but Lois must have the whole basketball team over for a little party after the game next week. It won't be any work, Mom. That's her war cry. But honestly, the very thought of the dishes makes me weak.
Well, Anna, I have my own pet way of handling the dishwashing problem. I never wipe them because I use this marvelous new all-purpose soap, Concentrated Super Suds, in the blue box. It cuts the grease in a jiffy. Just give the dishes a hot rinse and they'll drain dry. And they sparkle, too.
Well, Bessie, that certainly sounds good to me.
Oh, Concentrated Super Suds makes entertaining much easier. All those table linens, for instance. I just whisk up a good suds and drop them into the washer. Concentrated Super Suds have plenty of life and body, you know. They soak out the dirt without any scrubbing.
I've always noticed how snowy white your tablecloths look, Bessie.
Well, now you know why. And colors come out fresh and pretty, too. Here's another comforting thought. Concentrated Super Suds in the blue box removes most germs doctors warn are in all soil clothes. Germs which, if not removed, may spread sickness. You know, with all the company the kids have in winter, it's good to know that your clothes and dishes are really clean. Hospital clean.
And now, let's see what's happening to Mert and Marge. Today, Mert and Marge are looking forward to another year, and for the benefit of our new holiday audience, we'd like to give a brief review of the highlights in the life of Mert and Marge. The two girls, you know, are mother and daughter, although you'd never know by looking at Mert that she was old enough to have a grown-up daughter. Since the day that Mert, an experienced trooper, helped the 16-year-old Marge to land her first job in the chorus, the two have known the ups and downs of theatrical life. Today at 38, Mert is the widow of Francis Hayfield, the noted theatrical producer who died last year. Marge at 22 is the wife of Jack Arnold, the lawyer, and the mother of 2-year-old baby Midgie. After varied experiences in Hollywood and the Midwest, our friends have returned to New York City, where Jack Arnold has accepted the post of Chief Assistant to District Attorney Dunham, and where Mert and Marge hope to reopen the old Hayfields Theater with a production of a new play by Henri Dufay. And now we turn to the Arnold apartment on the corner of 79th Street and Central Park West. In the kitchen we find Helmy, the faithful maid who has gone through many of Mert and Marge's experiences with them, preparing dinner.
Jingle bell, single all the way. Old Saint Nick, he came down freak, but now he's gone away. Oh, jingle bell, single. Oh, well, that was a close one. Yeah, we'll have all the string beans on the floor in a minute if I don't be more careful. Come back up here, beans, yeah. Jingle beans, single all the way.
Well, Helmy, you sound happy.
Oh, I am, Miss Margie. I wasn't yelling too loud, was I?
No, not at all. How's the dinner coming?
Well, it's coming. It will be ready on time.
Well, can you hold it back just a little? Mr. Arnold just phoned, and he'll be a few minutes late.
Oh, sure, I can hold back on it. The beans and the potatoes, they can wait, all right, and I won't put in the steak until Mr. Arnold is here.
Good. Have you made the roquefort dressing for the salad?
Well, not yet, Miss Marty. I was just going to do that.
Oh, heavens, that's probably Myrtle and Mr. Dufay now, and I haven't changed my dress yet.
Well, I will go let them in while you run and change now.
No, you stay right here and fix that salad dressing. I'll let them in, and I'll let them wait. Be sure not to put too much oil on the dressing, Helmy.
No, I won't, Miss Marty.
I never knew Myrtle would be so early before. All right, I can't fly, you know.
Oh, Marge, you're here. Thank goodness.
Oh, Clarence, it's you.
Of course it's me. Marge, I've been creating clothes for you and Mert for the play. And wait till I tell you, I've got the most beautiful...
Yes, Clarence, yes, but right now I'm in a hurry.
But it's for your clothes, Petunia, the ones you wear in the third act. All of a sudden it came to me you shouldn't wear a dress at all in that act.
What? Not wear a dress?
No, not under any circumstances. It would be completely wrong. You'll wear a tailored street suit.
Clarence, please. I honestly haven't got time to talk about it now. Probably you're right. Probably you're very right. But it'll have to wait until tomorrow.
But it's such a nice idea.
Yes, Clarence, your ideas about clothes are always nice. But Myrtle and Mr. Dufay are coming to dinner. Now I'm going to dress. Drop by tomorrow morning and I'll listen to your ideas about the tailored suit.
Is Helmy in the kitchen?
Yes, Clarence, naturally. She's getting dinner. Go on out and say hello if you want to.
Thanks, Petunia. I think I will. I wish I knew why it is. I always get my best ideas just when everybody else is too busy to listen to them.
Jingle all the way, oh, what fun it is. Oh, hello, Clarence.
Happy is a little lark tonight, aren't you, Helmy? Might I ask why?
Why? Oh, I don't know, Clarence. Just because it's a happy time of year, I guess, maybe. Aren't you happy?
Me? Oh, I suppose I am. What are you doing, anyway? What's that stuff?
Stuff? This isn't stuff. This is Roquefort salad dressing.
Oh, yes. Nasty stuff, isn't it?
It is not. It's very good. Anyway, it will be when I get through mixing it.
Oh, I guess I'm happy at that, Helmy. I ought to be, goodness knows. Here are all my hopes coming true. Mert and Marge have found a play to do, and they've raised the capital to reopen Hayfield's Theater, and I'm designing the costumes for them. I don't know what more we could ask for, do you?
Well, if you ask for anything more, you will be a pig. Oh, that's Miss Myrtle and that playwright fellow, I bet. Clarence, give this stuff a mixing while I go to the door, will you?
What? Me?
Yeah, just do it the way I was doing it.
But this is such unpleasant stuff.
It won't do you any harm. Now, go ahead.
Tell me. Tell them I'll be right out. I'm almost ready.
Oh, yeah, Miss Margie, I will tell them.
Hello, Helmy.
Oh, good evening, Miss Myrtle.
Good evening.
Oh, good evening, Mr. Dufay. May I take your things?
Thank you.
Now, I'll just leave my coat on the chair here, Helmy.
Miss Margie will be out in just a few minutes. She's not quite finished with her dressing.
Tell her not to hurry. We'll make ourselves right at home, won't we, Mr. Dufay?
Indeed, yes.
Well, I think I had better get back to see how Clarence is making out.
Clarence, is he here?
Yeah, he dropped in for a minute. I have him working in the kitchen.
You've got Clarence working in the kitchen. You're good, Helmy.
Yeah, I think so myself.
Clarence? Oh, yes, he is the one you were telling me about.
Clarence Tiffingtuffer, the costume designer. He's been with us ever since the old days of Hayfield's Pleasures. He's already working on the clothes for this play of yours.
You mean of ours? I wrote it, but you are the ones who will make it live.
Hello there. I'm sorry I wasn't quite ready.
We'll forgive you this time, Mrs.
I think there is nothing to forgive. There's been such a very little wait, Mrs. Arnold.
Well, I'm afraid it's going to be a longer one before dinner. Jack phoned to say he'll be late, and I've told Helmy to wait for him. You two don't mind, do you?
But of course not. From what Mrs. Hayfield has been telling me, she's had a busy day.
You bet I have, but it's been worth it. Margie, we're all set to start casting tomorrow. I've ironed out the last few details today. We start casting the show tomorrow, and with any luck, we can begin rehearsals next week.
Next week? Oh, Myrtle, that's grand. Did you get Max Winters?
I sure did. He signed, sealed, and delivered. And from now on, all the business worries are on his shoulders.
Except the ones that you keep on carrying, anyhow.
No, sir. I'm going to let him do all the worrying. Oh, that reminds me. I want to see Clarence for a minute. Max wanted to talk to him about that first act gown he sketched. I'll be back in a minute.
Oh, I'd like to see Myrtle dump her worries on anybody else's shoulders. She's never done it yet.
Yet her worries don't seem to worry her, really.
Oh, Myrtle knows how to take things in her stride. But when she's in something, she manages to know just what's going on all the time.
I have not told you how beautiful you are tonight.
What? Oh, well, thank you.
I had hoped that it would be the other way. That after all these days of not seeing you, I would find you less beautiful than I expected. But I find you more beautiful.
I thought we decided that it would be better if you and I didn't talk about ourselves.
Yes, but you knew. You must have known what was behind that decision.
I thought it was the fact that we wanted to produce your play. You wanted us to do it.
You say that so easily.
Because it's true.
True? I will tell you what is true about us. It is what I said the first time I met you. That you are made for me. Now that I see you again, I know it is so.
Please, Mr. Dufay, we agree.
Yes, I know what I feel. And I know that in spite of all you say, In spite of the way you laugh at me and fend me off, you too must know the truth. Deep down in your heart, there is a stirring which you are fighting. It must be so.
Mr. DeFay, I've told you I happen to be very much in love with my husband. It also happens that every penny that Myrtle and I have, as well as some other people's capital, is invested in this play. Can you... Won't you be enough of a man to forget this foolishness?
And so for the second time, Henri Dufay has been unable to restrain his ardor. Will he listen to Marge's plea, or will he continue his unwelcome attentions? What would Jack say if he knew about it? Maybe we'll find out tomorrow. As you watch your small son trudge off to school, do you sometimes ask yourself, am I doing everything in my power to keep him well and happy? I wonder, with all the other things you do for him, if you guard him against the dangerous germs doctors warn are in all soiled clothes, germs which, unless removed, may spread sickness. Protect your family. Remove most germs as well as the dirt. Use the new soap, Concentrated Super Suds, in the blue box. This remarkable new household soap will make wash days much easier for you, too. It contains a special water softener so that even in hard water, masses of foamy suds pile up. Quick-action suds that soak out the dirt without a bit of tiring scrubbing. Women everywhere are enthusiastic about Concentrated Super Suds. They say their wash is sweeter smelling, immaculate, and goes on the line much sooner. They say white things are really snowy and colors have a new freshness. Concentrated Super Suds has won the approval of Good Housekeeping Institute. You can trust it to be absolutely safe for fabrics and gentle to your hands. Make your wash days easy with this new all-purpose soap. And protect your children by removing germs as well as dirt. Get clothes and dishes really clean. Hospital clean. Use Concentrated Super Suds in the blue box. Won't you join Merton Marge at this same time tomorrow? Your announcer, Gene Paul King.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Golden Age of Radio on WMKY in an episode of Mert and Marge, first broadcast on radio on December 27, 1937. We also heard Smilin' Ed McConnell on Aladdin Lamp. This has been the Golden Age of Radio, classic old-time radio programs from the 1930s through the 1950s. Material for this program provided by the Internet Archive, an online nonprofit library of books, movies, music, and old-time radio shows. On the web at archive.org. Tune in again for the Golden Age of Radio next week at this same time and channel on WMKY at 90.3 FM and online at WMKY.org.